Hi everybody, this is Pinakin Munshi and we will now cover chapter 5, which is on contract and supply chain management. The learning objectives of this particular chapter is we will try to understand the Indian Contracts Act of 1872. We will try to understand what are offers, acceptances and agreements, considerations and capacities as applicable to contracts, mistakes, misrepresentations and frauds, wagering agreements, liquidated damages and penalty, and bailment and pledge. So, the Indian Contracts Act of 1872. This act is actually divided into two parts. There is the first part, which is section 1 to 75, which deals with the general principles of contract, and this is largely applicable to all kinds of contracts. And of course there is a second part which is section 124 to 238, which deals with some specific kinds of contract, like indemnity and guarantees, bailment, pledge and agency. So as you can see, these are applicable only in specific cases. So this is how the act is organized. So, what are the essential elements of a contract? So, in a contract, basically there has to be an offer or a proposal by one party, and this offer has to be accepted by another party. The intention is to create a legal relationship or an intent to have a legal consequences between the two parties, that means the proposer and the acceptor. The agreement is supported by lawful consideration. That means consideration could be money or it could be a barter, it can be some of the goods, but a consideration has to be there to support the transaction. The parties which are involved in a contract have to be legally capable. So what we talked about, they have to be major, have to be of a sound mental composition. So all those conditions have to be satisfied. There has to be a genuine consent between the parties, so that it should be genuine in the sense that there should be no coercion, it should not be under any kind of a duress, under any kind of pressure. The object and consideration of the contract has to be legal and it should not be opposed to the public policy. That means again, it applies to only legal transactions and no illegal activities can be covered by this Contract Act. So, let's understand briefly what are offers, acceptance and agreements. So, an offer is a proposal by a person or a party where he expresses his willingness to enter into a contractual obligation in return for a promise, act or forbearance. An offer may be revoked by the offerer at any time before acceptance. Put it in simple words, offer is made in lieu of or in return of a promise for a consideration. So it could be a payment, etc. And an offer, once it is made, it can be revoked as long as the other party has not accepted the offer. Once the other party accepts the offer, you cannot revoke, you cannot cancel your offer. Acceptance is the act of assenting or accepting the offeree to an offer. So, offer when accepted becomes a promise. So, once the offer has been made and the offer has been accepted, then this becomes a promise, and this then leads to the agreement. So let's look at what are the differences between offer and acceptance. So offer is the first stage of a contract formation, where a proposal is made or a quotation is given, and acceptance is the second stage. So you have two parties here, One may be the seller and the buyer. Seller makes the offer, and the buyer may accept the offer. So here they have used the word offerer and offeree. Simpler terms would be a seller and a buyer. So offerer would be the seller, offeree would be the buyer. And offer is valid only when brought to the notice of the offerer, while in some cases acceptance is made though not known to the offeree. Put it simply, an offer is accepted. This has to be clearly communicated to the offerer. That means if you have a buy-sell agreement, the seller has given an offer, you have to formally accept the offer and communicate this to the seller. Only then the offer stands accepted, not otherwise. So you cannot say that we have accepted the offer and there is no legal proof to show the acceptance. Let's look at what is an agreement. So an agreement is a document to confirm the offer and acceptance in legal terms. So it basically outlines the promise on both the parts, what has been offered and what the buyer has to fulfill in return against the offer made by a seller. An agreement contains the promise, obligations and considerations of both the parties, which we have already clarified. Agreement may not always turn into a contract. To form a contract, the parties must intend to create a legal relationship. So many times the agreement is a kind of a one-time activity. A contract may be a ongoing activity, or which has a validity of ongoing transaction or ongoing activity for a certain period of time. So now let's look at contracts. So contract is an agreement enforceable by law, and the essential elements would be that there must be two or more persons to the party. So you can have a contract where minimum two people are there, two parties are there, there can be more parties as well. It's a legal proposal and it's a lawful acceptance, which is a must in a contract. The legal relationship in the parties is required. So when you enter into a contract, you are actually entering into a legal relationship. There has to be a consideration. Consideration can be money. In exceptional cases, consideration can be something else, like a barter. And the parties must be lawfully capable. That means in a contract is void. That means it does not stand the test of law if the parties involved are not lawfully capable. We will come to this later, what we mean by lawfully capable. So the genuine consent of the parties to the agreement, there has to be a consent. Again, I repeat, there should be no duress. The contract cannot be entered under any kind of a pressure. Object must be lawful, never illegal or immoral. Very, very straightforward. I don't need to explain that. Agreement should not be declared as void. So you have entered into an agreement and you have entered into a contract, but at no point of time the agreement should be declared as a void. Now there are various reasons why agreement can be voided. We will come to that a little later. Writing agreement or written agreements must comply with the necessary legal formalities. For example, there are certain agreements where you need to do stamping, what we call, we pay the stamp duty. We have to register the agreements. We need to even attest certain agreements, undertakings, etc. So these are all the written agreements. Some of the examples of the written agreements are negotiable instruments, contract of insurance, articles of a company. So these are some of the written agreements that you have. And if you look at the registered agreements, you have the purchase or transfer of property. You are aware that whenever you buy or sell a property, you have to register the property with the local body. So that becomes a registered agreement. The written agreements need not be registered. So when you are normally purchasing, in organizations, etc., the written agreements could be in the form of a sales order or a purchase order, which need not be registered. Considerations and capacity. So, contract is always based on agreement and acceptance of a definite offer. There has to be an intent to create a legal relationship. We have already talked about it, we are just repeating it, and there has to be a consideration. The capacity to the contract. Every person is competent to a contract, that means to enter into a contract, who is a major of a sound mind and who is not disqualified by any law, which means that if they have a criminal record, if he is a convict, so in certain cases they cannot enter into a contract. So, to repeat, the person is competent to enter into a contract, who is a major, he is a sound, having a sound mind, and he is not disqualified by any of the provisions of the law. So, next we come to mistakes, misrepresentation and fraud. So, mistakes in the contract may lead to the same being void. What are mistakes? Simple, harmless, it's a typographical error or something wrongly which has been incorporated in the agreement or a contract. So these are simple mistakes. A mistake can lead to voiding of the contract. Misrepresentation, this may be of two types. One may be the innocent one, where it's a genuine mistake, or it's a dishonest mistake, it's a malicious mistake. So, innocent type may be corrected depending on the nature, and if it's a dishonest or willful intentional misrepresentation, then it is considered as a fraud. So, if somebody is trying to deliberately misguide or maliciously defraud somebody, then this is a crime, and the person can be prosecuted for the offense of cheating under the Indian Penal Code. So, a contract which is induced by fraud is voidable at the option of the party whose consent was obtained by fraud. So, there is an option if the party who has entered into a contract due to misrepresentation with a malicious intent, they can actually void the contract. Not only that, they can also sue the party which has perpetrated the fraud, and they can demand compensation. So, what are the ingredients of the fraud? So, it's a false representation, it's done intentionally, and it is done with a purpose to deceive. Very classic case comes to my mind, it's a joke. Many years ago, there was an advertisement that, a machine is available to kill bugs. And there were people who sent money orders, to get this particular device. So, when they finally received the package, they found that there were two stones in the package. And it was mentioned there in the instructions that keep the bug on the bottom stone, take the other stone, and then kill the bug with the other stone. So, one example of fraud, where obviously, selling two stones for a price and for misleading the people maliciously. So, we have already mentioned this, that the party deceived can claim the damages. So, again we talk about the fraud and the innocent misrepresentation. Fraud is done with intention to deceive, whereas misrepresentation is not done with a malicious intent, it is not done to defraud somebody. So, misrepresentation may lead to the contract being void, but it does not entitle the parties to the contract to claim any damages. That means if one of the party has suffered because of the misrepresentation, then they cannot actually sue for or claim damages. Whereas in case of the fraud, damages can be claimed, and also you can prosecute the person who has perpetrated the fraud. Wagering agreements. So these are basically the betting agreements. You know, when you wager, when you bet with somebody, in India, wagering agreements are void, except in Mumbai. Frankly, I have not known this, because as far as I'm aware, wagering is not allowed in India. Contract becomes void by reasons of subsequent illegality. So an illegal agreement is void, but a void agreement may not be necessarily illegal. What do we mean by illegal and void? Just to give an example, that you entered into an agreement, and by virtue of change in law, certain transactions or certain kind of activities are prohibited. Then this agreement becomes void. Example, you know that prohibition has been imposed in Bihar and it's going to come into effect. Now, it could be that the retailers of liquor in Bihar have an agreement with the companies whom they represent. Obviously, because of the law, the agreement becomes void. But the agreements were not illegal in the first place. But when you say illegal, that means the agreement covers an activity which is not only not legal, but it could be criminal in nature. So this is the difference between illegal agreement being void and a void agreement being illegal. You can understand the difference. Coming to discharge of contracts. So contract can be discharged or terminated by various ways. One would be performance on agreed terms. So the contract was given for performing a specific task. Let us say a contract was given for constructing something in an industry. So once the task is completed, the performance has been executed or completed, the agreement or the contract would come to an end. It can also come to an end by mutual consent. So the two parties, it's an ongoing contract, and they decide to terminate the contract for whatever personal reason. So that is another way. Lapse of time, you have a validity in the contract. Let us say that the contract is valid for 3 years or 4 years. So after that time, if the parties do not wish to continue, they may just allow the contract to lapse, and that is how the contract may end. Operation of the law, we talked about, the Bihar example and the liquor example. So, by virtue of the law, suppose some activity is no longer allowed, then it can mean the contract is discharged or terminated. Impossibility of performance, if it can be proved that the contract has been entered into and the conditions specified in the contract are such that it is not sensibly possible to deliver or perform as per the contract, then this contract can be terminated or can become void. Or breach of contract, so if either party breaches the terms of the contract, then too the contract can be terminated. Liquidated damages. So there are certain contracts where the parties may agree, of some damages which are payable in the event of a breach. Then these are called as liquidated damages. So, to give an example, you are actually taking up office space. Now you are investing into making up the office. That means you are putting up the furniture, you are doing a lot of false ceilings, etc. And this is running into a quite a high bill. Now, you have entered into a contract for, say, 5-year period. As per the contract terms, you can give a notice, you know, a 3-month notice to terminate this contract. So, it would mean that maybe simply after 1 year of the contract coming into effect, you can ask the party, the tenant, to vacate the premises. But if they do that, they have already invested into the premises. So, in such cases, in a contract, you always have an amount which is decided, which would be, let us say, the kind of investment that you have made into these premises. And this would be payable by the landlord or the lessor to the party which is being asked to terminate the contract. So, important points to note are the amount is decided in advance, and in the event of a breach or in the event of a termination, this amount is payable, and this is what we call as the liquidated damages. Now, where the amount of compensation is left to be assessed by a court, that means it is not defined in the agreement or in the contract, then it becomes a unliquidated damages. So, for example, the same case I take of a office, let us say we have not spelt out a figure, and the owner of the premises wants to breach the contract and wants you to move out because he needs the premises. You may go to the court and you may put a claim for reimbursement of all the expenses that you have incurred in making the premises usable for your business purpose. So, in such a case where the court is supposed to decide the damages, these are the unliquidated damages. Penalty. So, if the amount payable in the event of a breach is fixed without any regard to the probable loss or the actual loss, but it is actually intended to discourage the party, from committing a breach, then it's a penalty. So, for example, there is a house which is rented. Now, let us say that the walls in the house, they have become dirty over a period. If there is a penalty clause, now actual cost of repainting the wall, maybe let us say 5,000 rupees. But the landlord can put a condition and say that if certain things are damaged, he will impose a penalty. And the penalty could be, let's say, for a damage of 5,000, or let's say there is a fixture like a wash basin which is broken. Now, the cost of that basin may be just 5,000 rupees, but the penalty that the landlord imposes can be 10,000 rupees or 15,000 rupees. So, then this is what is termed as a penalty. So, it is actually much higher than the actual loss suffered by the person or the party, and the penalty is supposed to frighten or basically to discourage the other person from any breach or any damage to the property. So that's a penalty. Coming to injunction, so an injunction is an order of a court restraining a person from doing a particular act. It is a mode of securing the specific performance of a negative term of a contract. So, for example, you are giving a certain intellectual property to a job worker, and for some reason you now wish to breach the contract, terminate the contract. The injunction could be brought in to stop the vendor or supplier from using your intellectual property in making goods for other people. That means you have supplied this technology for supply of goods to your customers or to the customers specifically directed by you. So, here you can have a court order which restrains the vendor or the supplier from carrying out certain activities. And this may be as per the terms of the contract, and these are the negative terms of the contract, which says that in the case of the contract getting terminated, you shall not do certain things. So, this falls under that category. So, injunction is basically a restraint through a court order, restraining the vendor or the party from carrying out certain activities. So, we now come to bailment. Bailment is a transaction where a person delivers goods to another person for a specific purpose. And once the purpose has been accomplished, the goods are to be either returned or to be disposed of according to the directions given by the person delivering them. The person who delivers the goods is called the bailer, and the person who receives them, he is called as the bailee. One example that I can think of this is, you know, many companies, they have this monsoon shed, especially manufacturing plants, etc. So, they have a special permission to put up a temporary extension or shed during monsoon, so that water doesn't come into areas, open areas where certain work is being carried out, even like loading trucks, etc. Now, after the monsoon, the bamboos and the tarpaulins which are used to construct these sheds are dismantled. So, it would come under this bailment, because at times the quality of the material which is used is such that it cannot be used for an extended period of time. So, once the monsoon is over, then these have to be either it is taken back by the contractor or the bailer, and or it needs to be disposed of. So, this is one example that I could think of bailment. We now come to pledge. Pledge or pawn is a contract where an article is deposited with a lender of money as a promise or a security for the payment of a loan or performance of a promise. So, a bailer or a depositor is called as a pawner, and the bailee or a depositee is known as a pawnee. We have heard of this money lenders or pawn shops. So, you know, people take loan, personal loan against jewelry. You can even think of it as Muthoot Finance. So, you are actually keeping the jewelry as a security, as a collateral. And so, that is what a pledge is. So, you are, depositing with a lender of money. It's a promise or as a security for repayment of the loan. So, I suppose this should be clear. What are the essential ingredients of a pledge? The property pledge should be delivered to the pawnee. So, in this particular case, we said gold. So, it has to be delivered to the pawnee. Delivery should be in pursuance of the contract. Obviously, if you are taking a loan against a collateral or a security, then it should be as per the contract. The contract should clearly mention this. Delivery should be for the purpose of security alone, and delivery should be upon a condition of return. That means once the promise has been executed, the repayment of the loan has been done, the security has to be returned to the original owner. So, with that, we come to the end of the chapter. Thank you.